Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Michael.
What story do you have today?
We have an extended segment of The Public Storyteller today, Michael. These are stories collected from staff, volunteers, and visitors at the Arthur R. Marshall Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge in Boynton Beach.
Hi, I'm the project leader here at the Arthur R. Marshall Loxahatchee Refuge. So the Arthur R. Marshall Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge is 143,000 acres in size. It starts on the north end at Southern Boulevard, and it goes all the way down to the Broward County line. The towns that are immediately to the east are Wellington, Boynton Beach, Delray Beach, and Boca Raton. A few years ago, we did a prescribed burn here on the refuge, and one of the things I'm really proud of, I'm proud of a lot of stuff, but one of the things I'm very proud of is our prescribed fire, our fire team. Our firefighters go all over the country, and they fight fires, and they also do prescribed burning, which is intentionally set fires for either hazard mitigation or improving the ecology of the refuge. We try to burn about 20 to 30,000 acres a year, about 1 week of actual burning. And one day, my firefighters were out working, and they were doing a fire on the south end of the refuge, and it just happened to be around FCAT time. And these fires, they're very well planned. There's a lot of computers, a lot of science that goes into them, a lot of weather predictions. And they had done everything absolutely right. And the fire burned really well. But the fire put up a huge column of smoke that could be seen from the high school in Boca Raton. And it just happened to be, like I said earlier, when FCAT was going on. And the kids were looking for any reason to get out of FCAT. So the kids started snapping pictures of this huge column of smoke coming up in the distance. And they started texting their parents saying, you know, that they were in fear of their lives, that the school was going to be overrun by fire and all kinds of things. And so then they created this whole panic storm of people calling the principal. The principal had to stop FCAT, and they didn't evacuate the school. They started preparing to evacuate the school, and they postponed it for an hour or two. And it just happens that that day, the head for the State Florida Division of Forestry was in the helicopter with our fire guy doing the burn. And so the phone rings, and he answers the phone. And they had this complaint of all these panicking people. And he goes, well, I'm sitting in the helicopter right here, and this fire is doing nothing, and it's not jeopardizing the school at all. So at the end of the day, not an ounce of smoke got on the school. There was no threat to the school at all. So we had done, by policy, all the correct notifications, but now we have additional people we notify. One of those is the principal of this high school.
I'm an active volunteer and member of the Friends of Loxahatchee here at the Wildlife Refuge. A short while ago, I decided to lead a canoe trip on the canoe trail here at Loxahatchee for a bunch of my friends from the community, all retired from various professions with an age range from 55 to 70. We had 12 guys, 6 canoes, and I was the canoe leader. We assembled at the canoe launching area that afternoon and headed into the trail. I quickly discovered that two of the fellas had apparently never been in a canoe before and had no idea even which end of the paddle to put in the water. So we stopped and gave them a little canoe instruction. And I told one of my other friends, who is a retired physical education teacher and athletic coach, would he mind staying back at the end of the trail of the six canoes to help these guys who are having trouble paddling? So we head out, and I get to the first stop point, which is about a quarter of a mile into the trail. I should mention that the trail is 5.5 miles long. So if you paddle gently, you can do the trail in 2 to 3 hours. But it makes a circle. So you have to come back to the start point. It's a man-made trail into the northern Everglades through the sawgrass, prairie, and tree islands. You can't get lost, or so we thought. A quarter mile into the trail, I assemble the guys, and my friend Al, who was the phys ed guy, is frustrated because the other two fellas, who will remain nameless, he's constantly trying to help them to keep up. So what we say at that point is, the other five canoes, we're going to continue on the trail. And you fellas, why don't you turn around, since you really can't keep up. Go back to the main canal, which is very wide. The trail's only like 20 feet wide, and the main canal's like, you know, could be 50 to 100 feet across at points. Why don't you go back to the main canal? You won't be bouncing left and right off the sawgrass trail because you can't steer the canoe. And you'll see some of the Everglades that way, but you won't have to worry about it. So they say, okay. And within a few minutes, as the five canoes head down the trail, they're out of sight. And about 2 hours later, after a great canoe journey, the five canoes emerge back to the start point, expecting to see our two friends. They're nowhere. So we say, well, maybe they paddled a little further than they realized, and we'll have to wait a while. They'll get back here eventually. Meanwhile, we pull the canoes out of the water and put everything away and get something to eat, and we're waiting and we're waiting, and it's 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, it's an hour. That's over 3 hours from when we left. Okay, now we're worried. Now we call the law enforcement guys, and we tell them, we don't know where these guys are. They couldn't paddle very well. Maybe they're stuck in the bank somewhere. You know, maybe a giant gator got them. We don't know. We can't find them. We don't know. So the law enforcement guys say, well, before we call in the helicopter search team or the airboat patrol, let's wait. So 3 hours becomes 4 hours, and now we're deciding which of us are going to call their two wives to tell them about what happened to their husbands. 4.5 hours from when we started, the two fellas emerge from the canoe trail. And we said, oh my God, we're glad to see you. What happened? And well, we decided that we came here to do the canoe trail, and we didn't care how long it took us. We were going to finish that damn trail just like you guys did, and we finished it.
Peuple a pas aimé écrit à clant les plein de l'eau. Écrit l'histoire li à 100%.
I'm the educational liaison between all educators in South Florida, and one of the main things that a lot of teachers like to do, if they have the flexibility, is to slog. My definition of slogging is walking into a body of water that's not a swimming pool and not the ocean. So we walk right from one of our levee trails here at the refuge in our management compartment C impoundments, and we walk right into the water and see what we can see and talk about what we pick up with our hands right in the marsh, the freshwater marsh. So one high school group that we had, I'm going to say maybe about 12. It was a small class. I met the students and gave them all their instructions that the person in front of them and the person behind them is not there for their support, that they have to be by themselves and take one step and then get their feel for their foot and then take another step, because we have no idea what's underneath the water, and the first step may put the water up to your ankles, and the next step may put the water up to your knees, and so anywhere in between. And so you have to be prepared for that, and you have to have good balance. And so we start off and walk off the marsh trail. Now, sometimes I slog in the marsh trail from our freshwater marsh, and sometimes I slog in our cypress swamp. I take students in a line so that then we make less of an impression on the habitat. And we use only several distinct trails until they get completely pushed down. We walked all in, and every single student, a little bit of hesitation, a little squeamish, oh, 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 the little yells, what's that, miss? What's that, miss? We saw bulrushes. We saw some water spiders. We saw little mosquito fish, gambusia. The students are very excited. Oh, what's this, miss? Oh, I found some apple snails, miss. And then, me being in front, of course, being the fearless leader, but I took a step, and it wasn't too far. We were still mid-thigh, but the water let loose, and there was sprays of water everywhere, and the alligator came up out of the water, made just a huge splash. There were screams from the students, and all the students, including myself, turning around and trying to skedaddle back to the levee. But I just couldn't get those students back in. They were a little bit afraid.
I am a volunteer at the Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge. Right now, I am responsible for, among other things, giving tram tours. Here on the refuge, one of the birds that is supported here and has flourished here is the limpkin. Limpkin is a large brown bird with silver spots. I think everybody's seen them, long neck and sharp beak. They are still a relatively unusual bird to see. And to see one feed, to see any animal feeding, is an experience. Animals are usually very shy, and when they're hunting, they're not around people. Well, we were driving down through the marsh trail, and there was a limpkin right on the edge of a canal. And we watched as he dipped his head into the canal and came up, and he had a big, round, exotic apple snail in his beak. And we sat there very quietly as the limpkin brought that snail up to the flat area at the base of the canal and started, he put it down on the ground and started to peck at it with his beak, trying to punch a hole in it. And after he pecked three or four times, he would reach back into the shell and try to grab the meat, and he would swing his head up and back and try to pull the meat out. Well, snails, I don't know if you know snails, but unless you get a hole in their shell behind the head of the snail, they have a vacuum back there. They suck all the air out, and they're really tough to get out. So this limpkin would beat on the snail shell four or five times with its beak, trying to punch a hole in it. Then it would grab it and swing, and when the snail wouldn't come out, he'd put it down and he'd beat it again. Then he took it in his beak and he beat it against the rock. And that didn't work. Finally, after about 5 minutes, this snail finally started to come out in little pieces. So he would grab the shell, and he would stick his beak in it, and he would grab a little piece, and you could see him throw it up in the air and swallow it. And then he'd go back to the snail, and he'd find it again, and he'd pull out a little bit more of it, and he'd swallow it. And when he was done, he looked at us, and you could tell that it was a look of victory, because he had finished that snail, he had something in his stomach. Even though there were humans within 10 feet of him, he was totally relaxed and concentrating on his feeding, as if he knew we were there watching and it was a show. He went down and he got a second snail and started the process over again. After about 10 or 15 minutes of watching this wonderful bit of nature. We felt that we had annoyed him enough, and we very slowly and quietly drove past him so that we wouldn't disturb him too much and throw him out of his feeding area. But there was such silence and such oohs and ahs from the people who were on the tram. But to actually stand there and watch him feeding and watch him reasoning out that he knows he has to punch that hole to get his reward, these inborn reactions just absolutely amazed everybody. On your way,
on your way. I have worked at the refuge as a volunteer in the visitor center, in the gift shop as friends. I've given tram tours. I came out here in January of 2012. I'd been out here before a couple of times, Everglades Day and other events. But I came out with a meetup group, people who go online and join up with other people of like interests. I joined about 3 photographic meetup groups. This was one. And they came out to the refuge for a meetup. I was looking at the pictures that were provided on their website on the internet, and I saw a picture that had 3 bobcat cubs. Real quick, I asked the guy, where did you get this picture? Where did you get this picture? He says, over on the marsh trail. I said, where? He says, just on the east side of the marsh trail, over by Bedner's. Oh, everybody knows Bedner's. Bedner's is the farm market that is on the corner of 441 and Lee Road. Okay, so I came back every week from January of 2012 until April of 2012. Trying to find these cubs where he shot this picture. Now, one day I said, I'm not going to go out on the marsh trail. I'm getting tired of this. That marsh trail is over 6 miles, and I'm getting tired. I don't walk all that good. So I'm going to go back and just going to walk around the boardwalk. So I get about halfway around the boardwalk, and on the boardwalk is this cat coming towards me. And one of the people behind me says, what is that, a civet cat? I got to look, and she said, very long legs, short tail, light brown in color. It's a bobcat. It's a young bobcat that had been born probably September, October, year before, which is one of the 3 cubs that the guy got the picture of. Believe it or not, the bobcat was not afraid of me. I was wary of him. He was wary of me, and he kept coming to me. He'd come to me, and then he'd turn around and go back the other way. Obviously, he was caught between 2 humans somewhere here on the boardwalk. Back and forth and back and forth and back and forth like half a dozen times. I got a dozen good pictures of this bobcat. It was super cool. So I figured, okay, he finally hopped up on the rail and off into the swamp. Brought the picture back, showed it to the people at the visitor center. A couple days later, I get an email that says, hey, would you be interested in being a volunteer? That's how I basically got started here at the refuge. On your
way, on your way. I came to South Florida a couple years ago. I came from New York City, and I grew up in the city, like the true heart of New York City, where there's bustling noise from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep. They call it the concrete jungle because it's everything that's cement and cold and dark and snowy. So I took an opportunity to take a class where we had this project where we had to go to the Loxahatchee National Refuge in Boynton. Initially, I didn't realize that it was going to be at the Everglades. I just thought, you know what, I don't know if this is even good. I was late, you know, I wasn't taking it serious. I had some things to do, so I said I almost canceled at the last minute. So I get there, first I'm lost because there are no signs. It's the Everglades. And then I start getting into these activities where we're canoeing. I never thought that I would find fun or a connection in a place so boring, right? Like, quote-unquote, boring. And immediately, I thought to myself, wow, I do feel different. You can imagine the transition for me from the city life to this swamping Everglades with gators and birds. Not only can you hear the serene sounds, but you feel serene, right? It's no longer the ambulance, you know, and the cop cars. It's like the hummingbirds. And I wasn't even trying to be quiet. I was in silence. I was in meditation. Even though I was active and I was talking to people, I still felt connected, you know. In the city, it doesn't feel like I'm connected, maybe because there's a lot of noise, and I just become a part of the noise. So I think the same kind of thing happened while I was canoeing, and it was just kind of gently gliding on top of the water, kind of, you know, feeling the trees and just the nice, gentle breeze. A friend of mine that was in the canoe broke out in song, and he started singing just happy songs, like a child-like happy song. And I thought to myself immediately, that's how I feel right now, like a child in a happy song. I realized that I am connected to this world. Through a simple little canoeing, it changed me, I think. It changed my perception about what's important.
Stories from the Arthur R. Marshall Loxahatchee National Wildlife Refuge, featuring Rolf Olson, Steve Horowitz, Serena Rinker, Bill Ross, Tony Lang, and Jalitza Minaya. Karen, it sounds so cliche, but right in our backyard, and I don't think I've ever been there.
You know, they say if you live in New York City, you don't go to the Statue of Liberty, you don't go to the Empire State Building unless you're a tourist coming in for the weekend. And it's true, sadly, with so much of the beauty in this area.
I get a real sense of the variety of activities that take place at the park.
Nature storytelling is quite an amazing thing. You would think that something that is language-based would have nothing to do with something that is nature-based. Nature writing is a very difficult thing because you have to be incredibly descriptive. When you're talking about psychology or when you're talking about people or when, you know, you can have dialogue, you can have action, this is about things that are happening in nature. So they have to be able to paint a picture really, really well because it's our senses that are so important out in the natural world. So by making the natural world come alive, they are doing something amazing.
Well, thank you for bringing those stories in, Karen. We'd like to have more stories from our listeners. How can they get in touch with you?
Send me an email at cneile, that's C-N-E-I-L-E, at fau.edu.
Or contact me here, 305-995-2264. Our website also has contact information and archive stories, WLRN.org. Look for radio and the public storyteller. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. The Public Storyteller returns next Sunday.